Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on March 11th, 2009. But before we get into that, let's go ahead and mention what you were just talking about, Bob, about previews.
Yeah, normally preview ships on the last Wednesday of the month, which for March would have been March 25th, which would be just a couple of days after you're hearing this episode. But previews this month is actually coming out on Wednesday, April 1st, which is the first Wednesday of April. And then I assume the next issue would come out on the April 29th at the end of April as normal. Unless they're shifting their whole schedule forward.
And no, it does come out on April 29th.
So anyway, it's just a little different pattern than what we're normally used to. So we'll be doing our previews call and our previews episode on the 10th of April. And we are shifting our deadline for our previews episode to be concurrent with the previews call. We're pulling it back to Friday. So previews episode submissions as well as the Skype call will both be Friday night, April 10th.
And the reason for the change in the deadline is just so we have a little more time to prep the episode. I mean, if for some reason you don't get it to us until we wake up Saturday morning, I mean, the world's not going to end and we'll probably include the stuff. But when we were starting to get stuff, you know, that Sunday morning right before we record, that was cutting it a little too close.
Well, I guess the theory is like everybody procrastinates until the very last day, and then they do their submission on the last day. So, well, now the last day is Friday, so procrastinate and do it Friday night instead of procrastinating and doing it Saturday night at midnight.
Exactly.
You know, it's just, you know, it gives us a little bit of a chance to pull it together because it does take us a little bit of effort to, you know, pull the show notes and, you know, kind of screen and volume level and do other things with the submissions we get from everybody. So that extra day will be really helpful to us.
Indeed.
Okay, so our first book for this week from DC is Batman Battle for the Cowl, number one of three. What do you think?
You know, this is probably the first thing I've read from Tony Daniel. I really don't know what else he's written. If it's been for DC or Marvel, I've probably read it and stuff. I think he did an okay job. I think this was a decent story. But, you know, it falls into kind of the must-read for the big-picture Batman stuff, because everyone wants to know who's going to be the next Batman, certainly. But, you know, I kind of went into this thinking Nightwing is the only viable choice to replace Batman. So
yeah, I'm on the board with you there, John. It's like, I want to know who the next Batman is, but if it's not Nightwing, I'm going to be irritated. So, you know, I'm reading this story not really wanting it to surprise me.
If it's not Nightwing, they've got to do a hell of a sell job in these three issues to convince me whoever it is the right choice. And it could be done, but I'd be really hard-pressed to name anyone else that makes sense. But maybe it's something, you know, because, again, to me, Nightwing is such the obvious choice that I really haven't thought it through past that. But, you know, this first issue hasn't really done anything to convince me that there's somebody else who's the right choice. And the other thing that kind of surprised me in this is this was a fairly crowded story. There were probably a dozen heroes in here, plus a ton of bad guys. I mean, it mainly focused on Robin and Nightwing, as it should. And, you know, Tony Daniel did a good job kind of, you know, balancing the action and stuff. There was a lot of voiceover narration, but it, you know, it kind of worked. The one thing I found just hilarious is, okay, Batman's gone. People of Gotham have kind of gotten wind of this, So, of course, Gotham descends into anarchy once again. I mean, it seems like if the buses run late, Gotham's going to descend into anarchy. It just seems almost cliche at this point.
Doesn't take too much, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't take too much to send Gotham into anarchy. And a lot of crazy shit happens to Gotham City. I mean, you got, like, earthquakes and plagues and there's all kinds of stuff. And it's like, this city, if they're teetering on the brink of, like, you know, just Batman being gone, sends them over the edge. It's like, okay.
Well, I'd love to see some stories set in the neighboring cities where they've got the walls ready to put back up around Gotham. You know? Because they seem to wall off cities the minute they think it's a lost cause in the DC universe.
If you just keep a wall around Gotham City.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Just expand the one from Bloodhaven, I guess.
Make it one of those, like that New York City in the John Carpenter movies.
Right.
Escape from New York. Just make it a big prison.
I mean, overall, I liked this. I didn't think it was brilliant. There were one or two places I thought the storytelling could have and probably should have been a little bit clearer. But, you know, it served its purpose. It got the story off to a decent start. But, you know, I'm really kind of hoping they up their game a little for the next two issues. I mean, what did you think?
Pretty much the same. I mean, there's just lots of stuff going on in here. I mean, the art was really good. The story was kind of, it was there. I mean, it
exactly. It wasn't bad. It
wasn't bad, but it's nothing that knocked my socks off because, again, this story feels more like an editorially necessary thing that had to be told, as opposed to, you know, this story that someone is passionate about telling.
Exactly. This is
what I'm saying. It's like it just has to happen
exactly.
To set up who the next Batman is, and it's not like it's a story that, in and of itself, is a compelling story to read. At least for me.
I mean, to me, this is the kind of thing that it's moving chess pieces on the board.
Yeah.
It's something that has to, like you said, happen to fill the gap between, you know, what went before and what's coming next. And we've seen a lot of these stories before, and we'll see them again. And there's nothing wrong with these kinds of things. I like it when they actually take the time to show how they get from point A to point B when they want to do a major status quo change. And, again, like we said, this does a decent job of that, but it's not something that I'm thinking, oh, wow, people have got to read it because it's so brilliant. No, you kind of, if anything, if you have to read it for any reason, it's to see the chess pieces get moved, and that's it. There's nothing wrong with this story. The art's good. The story's fine. But it's not one where I'm thinking, wow, this is so clever, so brilliantly written, so anything that I recommend it. But also, it's good enough that I'm not saying skip it or this is a waste of time or wow, why did they print this or anything. It's perfectly fine. Middle of the road kind of a comic. And, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with that. They had an opportunity here, I think, to really blow us out of the water. But frankly, I mean, with the amount of stuff they're trying to accomplish here, that would have been hard for anybody to do.
Yeah. And, you know, realistically, like you said, you've got to set up the next wave. I mean, it's like, well, you ostensibly kill Batman. I mean, he's not dead, right? But you're meant to, or at least the people think that he's dead. This is really setting up the next wave of Batman titles, right? So, I mean, you're going to get a new Batman and Robin title from Morrison and Quitely. And whoever comes out of this as Batman is going to be Batman. The Robin will be a new Robin unless they ran a shrinking beam on, you know, Tim Drake. I'm thinking it's probably going to be Damian. And, you know, then you got the new Batman title. Batwoman seems like she's going to be featured as the title character in Detective Comics. You've got a new Red Robin comic, and I assume we were talking about this the other day, that Robin, Tim Drake, is going to become Red Robin.
Yeah.
Right? Because Damian, I think, is going to be the new Robin. And then you got another book called Batman Streets of Gotham that's going to be coming out, you know, by Paul Dini and Mark Andraco. And then you've got Gotham City Sirens, which is, you know, Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and Harley Quinn. And then, I mean, you're going to have Batman Confidential will continue going on telling just, you know, out of continuity as far as I can tell Batman stories. And then The Outsider. So, I mean, they kill, quote unquote, Batman in order to really ramp up and expand the Batman family of titles.
Well, you know, that brings up something else I wanted to mention about this comic. And that's the last page on the inside, which is the DC Nation page. On it, they spend, you know, about half the page showing us art from presumably the new upcoming Batman and Robin.
Yeah, well, it's quietly art, so yeah, I would imagine.
So, and like you've just gone through all the titles they're coming out with and stuff 3 months from now. Now, yeah, they've got to be pushing some of this because it's going to be in the next previews that comes out in a couple of weeks. But wouldn't it have made more sense to spend this DC Nation page this week pushing, I don't know, maybe Battle for the Cowl, since that's what's on the stands now? It seems like they're spending too much time telling us what's coming next at the expense of what's happening now. And I think a lot of people might be more excited about Battle for the Cowl if it wasn't a foregone conclusion of here are all these titles we're going to have afterwards.
You make an actually very interesting point there, because DC is always seeming to push in a somewhat cryptic fashion something that's going to happen 3 to 6 months down the line. You know, they'll put up some poster image that, you know, ooh, you know, try to figure it out. You know, it's like, I don't know, they're trying to like appeal to, you know, cryptographers or something who want to decipher their marketing message. As opposed to the old days, that really sucked me into Marvel Comics was Stan's bullpen bulletins, where it was like a listing of what was out right now, which is what you just said. It's like, hey, you know, this week or, you know, next week, here's all these cool Marvel comics that are coming out, and here's what's happening in them, and go out to the store now and buy these other comics that I'm telling you about here, true believers, you know. And DiDio has the opportunity to do this with this DC Nation column, and he just never seems to do that. It's always... And you know, this is a perfect example. It's not like they come and say, hey, look at this cool Frank Quitely art for the upcoming Batman and Robin. They just have this really cryptic, you know, they don't say what it's from. It's just like, oh, here's some very special art for a very special new comic series. And for the title and team, as we like to say on every DC Nation page, to be continued. And it's like, why can they not just say, here's some cool art from the upcoming Batman and Robin series by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, and, you know,
more to the point,
plug the thing, you know?
More to the point, though, since this is clearly aimed at comic book readers, since it's inside the comic, shouldn't that catchphrase not be to be continued, but on sale now?
Yeah, but they never do that.
But perhaps they should. I mean, certainly they got to be...
They
got to be pushing this stuff. They've got to be, you know, prepping the retailers, the people like us who pre-order and stuff. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be talking about the next wave of Batman titles now. I'm just saying they shouldn't be doing it at the expense of the current books. And, you know, again, this is the sort of thing where Battle for the Cowl should be what everyone's talking about versus, oh, wow, I'm looking forward to the new, you know, slate of Batman books. And what are people talking about for the most part? The new Batman books versus the current ones. Again, I'm enjoying this. It's a decent series, and you know, I'm curious. You know,
no, it's a 3 out of 5 for me. You know, it's an okay comic. It's
I gave it a 3 also. It's
real quick question for you because you might know. They're like two pages after the staple.
2 pages after the staple. One.
You got that bat signal with the RIP on it on the left, and then you got all these villains on the right. So you got Mr. Zazz, Killer Croc, Poison Ivy. I don't know who the guy is with the, unless that's 2 panels of Scarecrow. Who's the teeth in that?
That'd be Mr. Fisher, whatever, from Living Hell, Arkham Asylum.
Okay, I don't know who that is. And then who's the girl in the pink thong?
That's actually a good story that if people haven't checked out, they should. Basically what happens is a accountant who embezzled or something like that pleads insanity in Gotham, and the judge is like, are you sure? He's like, oh, yeah. And to which the judge is like, okay, you are crazy. So this white-collar criminal or whatever gets sent to Arkham and just gets essentially devoured. I mean, turned into a super criminal by going there.
What was that book called?
Arkham Asylum, Living Hell. It was a six-issue miniseries. And it was one going in that I'm thinking, okay, we'll see. But it's like, okay, it was a clever idea and, as I recall, decently executed. And I'm pretty sure that's who that is. I think it's Mr. Fish, but I could be wrong on the name.
So then you got Scarecrow, and then who's this J. Doe girl in the pink panties?
Presumably the Jane Doe, and that was one that I couldn't really place off the top of my head. But, you know, okay. I also didn't really kind of go through and try to...
Yeah, I mean, I figured it was Jane Doe, but I just didn't recall that character. I don't know where she's from, and it's like you're, like, highlighting who I thought were, you know, like major Batman villains who the Hood is, you know, getting out of Arkham, and I didn't know who two of the six were, so much for my Batman lore.
Well, that goes back to just how crowded this issue was. I mean, you've got easily a dozen heroes, and probably through these sort of essentially cameo appearances, you know, a dozen supervillains to varying degrees. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where it doesn't really matter who some of these are, but, you know, it's... I agree. There are other characters they should have put there that would have made more sense. It fell into the, okay, it's you know, another villain.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I couldn't enjoy the rest of the issue without knowing who this character was in the one panel. It's just I remember going by it and it's like, who the heck is that? It's like,
well, and again, they've got so many recognizable characters in the Batman, you know, Rogues Gallery, that to pick a reasonably obscure one was kind of surprising. So
anyway, I gave it a 3.
Yeah, as did I. It's one, if you're into the Batman stuff and you want to know who the next Batman is, obviously you're going to check this out. Otherwise, you know, it's just another story. So, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
The Immortal Iron Fist, number 23. Continuing that 8th City of Heaven story arc, I believe.
Yeah, overall, I'm really enjoying this series. This issue, I felt the art was a little shaky in a couple of places. And it's the kind of thing that there are a couple individual panels I could probably rip apart if I really wanted to.
Well, this issue had like a cast of thousands on the art. I mean, you had Travel Foreman doing pencils, but I mean, there are, you know, four different inkers credited here. There's two other pencilers even, you know, so there's a guy, Tonki Zonjic, who did pages 1-3 on pencils, and Timothy Green did 18-19. So, I mean, literally, you got the hands of seven different artists touching this issue. So, you know, once I noticed that, I wasn't terribly surprised that the art was a little uneven throughout the issue. And the art in this issue was the weak point of the issue. I mean, it was a good story, but the art to me was detracted from the story.
Well, and I'm gonna maybe unfairly go with maybe it's the inkers that were kind of the problem, because like the two pages by Timothy Green with the Japanese art style or whatever,
mm-hmm.
had no problem with those. I thought those were good.
And they fit because it was kind of like a flashback kind of thing, and having that kind of style, you know, was fine.
Exactly. It was what the story needed at that point. But it's just kind of after those first three pages, all the other stuff by Travel Foreman with the like you said, cast a thousand inkers and stuff, some of it was good, some of it, it's like, wow, this is just really either rough or just maybe rushed. So, you know, I agree that the art is clearly the weak point on this. I thought they did a good job giving us some more backstory of Kunlun and kind of the history of the Iron Fist and the mythology that they've been building up in this series. And, you know, I enjoyed that part of it. It was a good kind of a blend between, you know, action, exposition, and kind of, I don't want to say implied events, but certain events that they do via montage sequences and stuff that really show both the passage of time and, you know, the essential information getting conveyed. This is a, you know, a second chapter in an ongoing series, but does a good job resetting up where things are at and why, and moving the story forward. So I think even if you skip the first part of this story, you wouldn't have any problems with this. So, like I said, I continue to enjoy this series, and to me, based more on the story than the art, I gave this a 4. And that's... go ahead.
Yeah, and I kind of pulled it down to a 3, mostly because of the art. I mean, it was a solid 4 on story, but the art was distracting enough to me that it pulled it down.
I can see that. I'm not going to say this is the strongest 4 I've given out either. But to me, part of what kept it up there is they've been doing such a great job, and this issue continues in that tradition of again, building up the mythology of Iron Fist. This is a character that, you know, was big back in the 70s, but it kind of started to fall out of fashion, if you will, when I started getting into the Marvel Universe. They were wrapping up the Power Man and Iron Fist series. And really, once that ended, the character would show up occasionally, but was pretty much ignored for, you know, the majority of my reading time in Marvel. So to see him coming back in a big way, getting treated with respect, and then building up kind of the mythology around him, I'm really happy with that. You know, they've taken a character that was just one of the many in their library and made him incredibly viable. So...
I'm a little worried about what they had Chang Ming do to him there.
Yeah, I was curious about that too.
So I'm holding my reserve on where the story's going to go from here, you know, with that having been done.
Mm-hmm. I am curious about that. The one thing that story-wise didn't quite work out for me, does everybody apparently know Morse code?
You know, I was thinking that, and it's like, you know, is this Morse code or is this, you know, I mean, because like the old guy who's tapping on the cell, I mean, it's like, what, he's been like locked up here for 1,000 years or something, and he's like, speaks Chinese, you know. I did appreciate the fact that they just put the little, you know, angle brackets on the speech or whatever, and gave us the translation and didn't what some of these writers will do now is just put the stuff in a foreign language and leave it up to us to be completely confused if we don't speak that foreign language.
Although it would have been funny if they had actually, in addition to the translated stuff, tossed out the Morse code.
Yeah.
But it would have been really, really long.
Well, I mean, you could, if you have a lot more stamina than I have, the Morse code that's kind of like writ on the battlefield there,
mm-hmm.
in blood, you know, someone can like try to interpret that and see if it actually means anything.
I was just surprised because that seems like something that's going to take a little bit of time to actually do. And, you know, they're usually dragging the people off this arena pretty quick, but. I was willing to let that slide, because they needed it to move the story along. It kind of made sense, but, you know, it was something I did question. So, overall, Iron Fist, I think, is really one of the better books out there, and one that I think too many people are not checking out. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Sure. Our last book is The Life and Times of Savior 28 from IDW Comics by J.M. DeMatteis.
This was one that was kind of billed as the DeMatteis' final word on superheroes. And I really kind of wish they hadn't pitched it that way, because it set certain expectations with me that I didn't really feel this met. This was a good story. I enjoyed this story. But it didn't seem to me to be that kind of final word on superheroes, or even the start of the final word on superheroes, if you know what I mean. Savior 28 is kind of an iconic blending of Superman and Captain America. He's been around since, what, the 30s or something. And this is kind of going over, you know, his life story. The story is told mainly through voiceover narration, but that kind of works well in this story because it gives us a good view, and a somewhat slightly biased view, of course, towards both Savior 28 and the guy doing the narrating, who is pretty clear early on in the story and very clear at the end. I liked this. This was good. It hit the iconicness of it, but it didn't seem to me to have anything that was so profound, so unique, to make me think, oh wow, they're really telling something that's just so different here. And maybe that's unfair of me. What were your thoughts?
I don't usually come into these things with a huge expectation. I didn't give it a whole lot of thought, so I just kind of picked the book up and started reading it, so I wasn't disappointed based on what I thought it was going to be and having it not match that. So I just read the story, and I really liked the story. I saw it as more of a take on, I mean, I could see elements of DeMatteis's take on Cap, take on Superman, you know, and various things like that, just kind of like the superhero genre in general, and various interactions that we have seen in other places. I really liked the story. The art for me was a detractor from the story. I didn't think that the art measured up to the quality of the story. It was a little rough in places. I won't go so far as to say it was unclear. It's just, I don't think there's anything actually wrong with the art. It's just an art style that I'm not a personal fan of.
I think it's
so as a result, it's kind of like a Kirby crossed with Mike Allred or something, you know, in a good way.
I think it's an art style that's not really appropriate, or maybe not ideal for this kind of a story.
Yeah, it's a little cartoony.
It has almost a silver.
You know who? Not Kirby. It's Dan Spiegel.
Yes.
Crossed with Mike Allred.
Yes. Yes.
I would say it's a Spiegel Allred kind of morphing, and it's not cartoony. Cartoony is not a correct comparison to it. It's just a very open style, and I think there are people who would love this style more than me. It's not one that's in my sweet spot, and I think it detracted from the story a bit for me.
Well, it was enough of a simplified, kind of like you said, open, clear style that kind of run counters to the nature of the story. We're actually, you know, digging in and kind of investigating this guy's life. So something that had a little bit more subtlety, a little bit more detail, might have worked better for this story.
I mean, it's kind of a dark story, and the art style is not one that lends itself to that kind of a story.
Yeah. Again, it's fine art, but the style doesn't seem to me in sync with the story. I'm trying to think who would have been a artist that I think would have fit this sort of a story better.
heck, you could have taken that Tony Daniel art from Batman and it would have worked well.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one where, for me, the story, I didn't have any major problems with. It just, it's more the marketing. They set this up as it was going to be this, you know, kind of I don't say a treatise on superheroes or, but again, the final word on heroes from DeMatteis. And it was good. He covered a lot of ground in this issue and did some slightly interesting, you know, twists on a couple of things. You know, the whole what's his origin bit I liked because it kind of harkens back to the retelling of superheroes' origins time after time and how they keep changing. So he played with some of those ideas, but to me this was like an Astro City light, although a dark take on it, if you know what I mean. It just didn't have quite the sense of depth. And maybe I'll feel differently when I read, you know, future issues or whatever. But to me, this fell more into the average category, whereas I was hoping it would have been, you know, more of a you know, stronger story than that. There's nothing wrong with it, but it didn't really, you know, kind of meet my expectations, and whether those were reasonable expectations or not, who knows. I thought the way IDW had kind of pitched this, you know, that was the main thing that set my expectations. I think if they had just done, hey, here's a history of, you know, this one superhero or whatever, and not, ooh, it's you know, the culmination of everything Matthias has to say on superheroes or whatever, I probably would have had a more favorable viewpoint. So, as it was, I gave it a 3. I think there are things they could have done to improve it, but nothing where I felt they absolutely positively had to. This was, you know, fine. How about you?
I liked the story considerably more than you did, I think, in that I would give the story, DeMatteis' story, I really liked it. I mean, I was entertained thoroughly throughout by the story, and the art pulled it down. I mean, I would give the story pretty much a 5, or at least a high 4, and then it gets pulled downward by the art. So I averaged it out and left it at a 4 with the art, and I'm curious to see how this is going to continue on. I mean, it's just, I'm just looking, it's kind of intercutting back and forth between time, and I'm just looking at it as, you know, just the, for me, it worked as the kind of disjointed scenes from this Savior 28 superhero's life. And I don't know why, maybe it's just something about DeMatteis' storytelling style here just really clicked with me. But I was very entertained by the story that went on here. So I'm looking forward to the next issue.
Well, again, it was a solid story, well told, and they cut back and forth in time a lot, but it was always clear what was going on.
Yeah, and that actually, for me, I appreciate it, because there are lots of other writers who try to tell that kind of story that it's unclear what's going on, it gets confusing, it gets muddled, and the fact that it stayed very, very clear throughout, you know, that just really worked for me.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that, in lesser hands, either on the writing or the art, could have just been really confusing as to, wait, where are we now? When are we now? There was just enough of this that felt, and part of it just by the nature of the project, a bit derivative here and there, that I was hoping for a bit more, and I know Matthias is capable of a bit more, and I'm hoping that future installments, you know, strengthen the story. Now, we didn't talk about prices and stuff, doing that real quick. Battle of the Cowl, 30 pages at $3.99. That works out to 13.3 cents per story page. Iron Fist was 22 pages at $2.99. That works out to 13.6 cents per page. Life and Times of Savior 28 was 22 story pages at $3.99, making it 18.1 cents per page. And that may have been another thing that was kind of, you know, gnawing at me while I was reading it. It felt, I don't want to say overpriced, because again, I expect, you know, non-Marvel DCs to be a little bit more expensive. Mm-hmm. That's almost nature of the beast, but I was hoping for a little bit more out of the $3.99. So. So what else did you get this week?
Oh, I got a lot of stuff. Well, I got 26 comics, Starman Omnibus, and Wormwood Gentleman Corpse, Volume 1 hardcover. Because I like Ben Templesmith.
Cool. So
his work is something that I rebuy in hardcover.
Makes sense. I got 22 comics, and that was pretty much it. What did I get? I got the final issue of Atom, Legend of the Blue Marvel, and that actually positioned the character such that we may see him in the future, and that would be cool with me. Fables, kind of a pausing story between arcs. Always a good book. Last Rang, Kings of War, I'm enjoying. That was issue 4 out of 5. They've actually done some decent stuff with the premise on that. Titans 11. This is one where I really hope they know editorially where they're going with the Titans franchise. Because McKeever, I think, is getting off the book after the crossover. I don't know if they've announced who's taking the Teen Titans or Titans over afterwards. But this is one where it almost seemed to be a placeholder issue. There were a couple of things, particularly at the end, that I'm like, okay, what was supposed to have gone on here? So a little disappointed with that. Booster Gold, good as always. Same with Captain Britain. Same with Green Lantern Corps. I mean, there were some really strong books that came out this week. So overall, good stuff.
I actually got 28 comics, as I come to think of it, and some of them are from, I guess they're from last week. I stopped at the comic shop and picked up a couple that I hadn't ordered. I forgot Killer of Demons number 1. That was recommended on the forum. I like that. That was a pretty good story. And then I got to issue 3 of Take a Chance, which we reviewed last week. I had stopped getting it at issue 2 because I really didn't like number 1, so I stopped pre-ordering it. Number 2, I really liked. You know, we talked about it last week. And normally then I can just add the next issue back on my list because it's a month until the next issue. But issue 3 came out 1 week after issue 2, so no opportunity to add it to my list. So I just popped in at the shop and got it for full price.
Yeah, I think having them come out back-to-back weeks was an interesting choice. We talked about that a little last time.
I haven't had a tremendous chance to read through too many of the books that I got. I did read the Action Comics. The Nightwing and Flamebird story was interesting.
I was a little surprised by one of the major changes they made to that, and that was changing the costume designs and putting them in what looked to be armor suits. And I liked the costume designs they'd been using for the last couple of months. And to me, it implied it made me question how well they'd thought through what they were planning to do with these characters.
Well, I mean, the explanation, I mean, minor spoiler. I mean, they're Kryptonians, so they're in these power armor suits, theoretically, so people will not think they're Kryptonians, right? And that, oh, well, they have power armor on. They must be regular people and they need these power. They certainly can't be Kryptonians if they're flying around in power armor. But, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of superheroes on DC Earth that are not Kryptonians that, you know, it's like up until New Krypton, you know, there was Superman and Supergirl out of, you know, literally hundreds and thousands of characters that are flying around, and, you know, you weren't assuming that they were all Kryptonians, so.
But pretty much ever since we started to see this Nightwing and Flamebird in public settings, they were doing things like the equivalent of the bat ropes and swinging around versus flying and stuff like that. They were already trying to hide that they were Kryptonians. So it seems like either they, the characters, or they, the writers, hadn't thought this through far enough to just start them out in power armor.
Yeah, I'm not based on this one, I mean, I thought it was okay, but I am not seeing this sustaining a year's worth of storyline.
No, me neither.
As it is. I mean, I'm sure they'll do it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, because this is going to run while, you know, Superman's off on that new Krypton series, which I think is 12 issues.
Yeah.
But I question the necessity of telling a year of Nightwing and Flamebird stories in Action Comics. That, you know, the same thing over in Superman, where we're going to get, who, like, the Guardian or something like that.
Guardian and Mon-El.
Yeah. Not screaming out to me as something that needs to be told.
But. Well, it goes back to, why do they keep feeling the need to take Superman out of the picture? You know, to me, that's one of the major problems in terms of the game plan at DC these days. They don't seem to really know how to handle Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And those are the key franchises there, and the key characters. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool.
Okay, and I got a special announcement for any of our listeners who are also customers of Discount Comic Book Service. I was asking them about what they're going to be doing for Free Comic Book Day this year. I know a lot of you know you can go to your regular comic shops beginning of May, and I think it's the first Saturday in May, and get free comic books. But if you're ordering your stuff online, you know, what is Discount Comic Book Service doing? They're going to do the same thing that they did last year, and they're going to allow customers to select up to 5 Free Comic Book Day books. The listing you can find at www.freecomicbookday.com/comics.asp. We'll have a link in the show notes. But if you send DCBS, their customer service line, if you just send them an email picking the 5 books you want, they will add those to your order, and you'll get those 5 Free Comic Book Day comics. So, pretty good deal. Just go out to that freecomicbookday.com/comics.asp link. You can see the books that are available. Pick the 5 that look most interesting to you and send an email to DCBS. Join us next week when we discuss Asriel, Death's Dark Knight #1 from DC, Wolverine #71 from Marvel, and Invincible #70 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.